The following podcast is broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, you're listening to Tasman Report, a program produced by the Tasman District Council. I'm your host, John Bullock, and in this episode we celebrate a big anniversary for Port Nelson and feature highlights from the Wednesday 17 March Information Forum meeting. In the chair, Councillor Trindy Walker invited Barry Johnson, the Environmental Policy Manager, to speak to the Environmental Policy Quarterly Review Report. And we have followed that up with discussions on Plan Changes 81 and 84, anticipated growth projections and the Motueka Master Plan.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Barry Johnson. I'm the Environmental Policy Manager here at Tasman District Council. For the new councillors, beside me is Jeremy Butler, who's the team leader of our urban and rural team, and Diane Worthy, who leads the natural resources team. So we're a team of about 14, nominally split down our TA and regional council functions. So Jeremy manages the TA functions in terms of environmental planning, and Diana does the regional council functions as well. So this is the first of our quarterly reports, update reports on environmental policy and our work we're doing. So I'll take the report as read, but I just note a few things that have happened in the last period, well, since the election, actually, since you were elected. So we've had a couple of plan changes that have come before you. So the deferred zoning plan change 79, you would have heard from Jeremy a couple of weeks ago. That decision has now been notified, so the appeal period's open for that. So that's a significant milestone. It's taken a couple of years or several years to get to that point, which is great. A plan change 81, a big urban growth plan change, which will provide about 10 years worth of growth. We have been working with the Ministry of the Environment and the Minister in particular to get that across the line in terms of a streamlined planning process. You're aware that last August, the government introduced legislation which basically stopped all plan changes around the country unless you have approval from the minister. So we're hoping to get word from the minister in the next few weeks that will go ahead. So that's a really, really positive thing as well. We've recently had a hearing for a private plan change, and that decision will be coming to you next week for adoption. And probably the other significant thing is our outstanding natural landscapes technical study, which has been, maybe 10 years in the making, it was finally completed. So that will be published very soon as well.
Thank you for that. And Kit will be our first question.
Yeah, I probably know the answer to this, but some of the other councils won't. So Plan Change 84, which is Korowaipuku Springs and water, we haven't had a reply, as I understand it, from the minister yet.
No, so we wrote to the minister in August requesting exemption from the plan stop so we can notify that plan change. We got a request for further information, which was provided in November. We haven't heard anything since then from the minister or the ministry, despite repeated requests for an update. So we're at the minister's whim, I guess you could say.
I have Mark next.
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of questions. PC 81, you make mention of the fact the process is to be tailored and appeals can only be on points of law. So I'm just wondering, for the benefit of the public, what is their capability of participating in the process and having an impact, if any?
It's apart from that, the process is basically the same as Schedule 1 under the RMA. So it'll be publicly notified. There'll be a period for public submissions. And then there will be a period for further submissions after that. So we'll have to publish a summary of submissions, and then there's a call for further submissions. Following that, there will be a hearing. The minister said that will be a hearing panel of five panel members. Two of them will be appointed by the minister, and that will involve a public hearing. And interestingly there, the minister has said that there will be cross-examination allowed in the hearing, which is very unusual for RMA hearings. And part of that is probably because of the limit on appeal rights at the end of the process. So you can only appeal on points of law rather than merit under the Environment Court.
And do you have any indication yet of timelines for that, or is it still up in the air given the pending ministerial?
Morning, Councillor. We don't have an exact timeline when it's going to be released, but we do understand that the paperwork from the officials and the ministry who have been working on it have now sent their advice, their final advice, to the minister. And I think that it was mentioned that, you know, a couple of weeks, a few weeks, is the likely timeframe for getting that that final direction. So what that will be is a final a direction from the minister, which will then be gazetted, and then our timeframes start. So we are eyeing a date of around 1st of May, possibly for the news line for notification. Possibly if we can't meet that timeframe, it might be 2 weeks after that. So probably early to mid-May is when we're looking at notification, assuming we get that letter from the minister.
So ballpark dates for when people can, I suppose, prepare themselves for submissions and hearings?
Well,
just I'm conscious so, that it's quite sure. compressed. So.
Sorry, yes. So that will start, that notification starts the submission period. And we are also, as of just yesterday, we're turning our minds to a public engagement. A public engagement around to make people aware of it, make people aware of how they can make a submission, online webinars, in person. You know, we haven't quite mapped that out yet, but that's what really what we're doing to make sure that absolutely everyone is aware that it's open for submissions. We've also, because it's had a long gestation period, we've got a very, very comprehensive list of people who are interested. So, of course, we'll be able to email them directly. So we won't just be relying on public notices.
Fantastic, thanks, Raymond. Other question is, ONL, it's been parked. Is there any reason why we wouldn't be seeking an exemption from the stop for the ONL, given how long it has taken us to get this far?
That was a call that was made by the last council. What we do know is that technical study will be very, very important in the new system. So for spatial planning, regional spatial planning in particular, it will have a role in terms of constraints and limitations mapping, and then further in the plans that go underneath that with rules, it'll have an impact as well. So given what's coming, it's probably not, you know, it may be work that would be lost if we went down that path. And I anticipate that if we did want to go down that path, we would probably get pushback from the minister given the timeframes.
Okay. Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. We'll move on to Tim. Oh, sorry. Hold that thought. I jumped the gun. See ya first, then you.
Okay. Thanks, Cindy. Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question about fresh water and the fact that we, in the previous council term, we spent a lot of time going into the details about freshwater planning, and there's been, you know, long, long process in Golden Bay, the flag process, and then with change in policy, government policy, it's been shrugged down to just a very small component of the work that has been done. So are you able to actually give an idea about where you think all that freshwater work has been parked, what's going to happen to that, and what the process is going to be? Do we know anything?
Bit of crystal ball gazing, because as you know, part of the legislation that came in August last year stopped regional councils from notifying any freshwater plan changes that related to the national policy statement, because they wanted to rewrite the policy statement. I think the work that's been done won't be lost. It will be a really important input into our natural resources plan. So under the new system, there will be an overarching regional spatial plan, and underneath it, kind of a district plan planning and a natural environment plan. So it will be an input for that natural environment plan, that background work. It's going to be really important, I think, because it shows the views or expresses the views of our communities. Timing-wise, it's probably 3 to 5 years away in terms of getting that plan across the line, possibly longer, I think. But so it is. It is unfortunate that we're in the situation, but crystal ball gazing, that's probably what I think. Yeah.
Sorry, another question. Is any work continuing, and what is being done to safeguard all that work that's been done up until now? Is it just sitting in a file on a computer, or?
We have parked it, so we were very careful to get it to a point where the work that was being done was complete. So we have essentially just parked it for now, except for those strands that are now part of Plan Change 84, which we really, really want to progress. But obviously, our hands are tied at the moment.
So would you say that it's a political, there's some, you know, it's a political decision maybe as to, because there's a lot of players in the field, as to whether or not there's going to be some movement on all that freshwater?
Yeah, it is.
Work.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're aware that the council decided at a council meeting last year in August, I think it was, to write to the minister to request an exemption for that freshwater plan change. Before we were able to do that, the Federated Farmers in Golden Bay wrote to the minister opposing the council doing that and opposing water conservation orders. Obviously, we have an associate minister who is an ex-Fed farmer chair, so I would imagine it's pretty political, and that's probably why we're not getting any traction.
You're listening to Tasman Report and a discussion at the 17 March Information Forum meeting about the Environmental Policy Quarterly Review Report. A question now from Councillor Timo Neubauer.
Look, I've got two questions, one about Plan Change 81 and one about Plan Change 84, and the latter flows on nicely from Celia's comments there. My question is, would it be helpful to have more political support for Plan Change 84 to signal to Wellington the importance of that plan change for our region?
Oh, any political support is welcomed, yes, definitely. The Mayor has spoken to Minister Bishop on more than one occasion around both Plan Change 81 and 84. But, yeah, any political support would be welcomed.
Okay, thank you. Now, Plan Change 81, understand that's a massive beast. It's a huge plan change that involves a whole lot of things, some of which, of course, I tend to agree more with than others. But I do understand that the plan change was built on a growth projection originally that was very high. And that was kind of underpinned by what we have seen historically in our district. Yet, if this growth projection was to change, and it appears to me that we aren't quite meeting the growth that we originally anticipated. So if there was a fundamental change in our growth projection, is there an opportunity to feed that back into Plan Change 81 before finalising it?
I mean, it is based on those growth projections. We're saying it's 10 years capacity. Now, a lot of those sites that are in Plan Change 81 will be deferred, which means until there's infrastructure available, then they won't be available for development. So really, if it's 10 years or it turns out to be 15 years because growth slows, the real lever there is infrastructure provision to enable that land to be released. So that's the lever, and the LTP is obviously the critical thing there. So if there's no money, there's no infrastructure, the land can't be released. That slows down land release in terms of what's in there. So whether it's 10 years, 15, 20 years worth of capacity, a lot of it is deferred, and that's kind of the lever in terms of when it would be available. But it provides certainty for developers. Developers know it's there, and it's there. So there's other funding mechanisms that come into play with that certainty of the land being zoned.
Yeah, sorry, subsequent one.
Sorry, could I just quickly just add to that? What Barry says is absolutely true for a lot of the greenfield locations. A lot of the brownfield intensification areas, because a very big part of Plan Change 81 is the new medium density zone, that will come into force, you know, immediately, effectively. It won't be deferred. So it will provide for that intensification product, which is what we're looking for, of the smaller homes, compact, in existing town centres, more quickly.
Thank you very much, if I'm allowed. Totally agree with what you just said there about the intensification part and what we're trying to enable through Plan Change 81. Now, obviously, with a very high growth projection, you're kind of forced to zone more greenfield than you would have otherwise been in a position to do. So my understanding is from economists that if you signal to the market that even in the medium long term, more greenfield is available, that dampens the appetite to take up those opportunities for intensification that you would like to achieve. So in that regard, while I hear you that it doesn't get realised until we actually have the infrastructure in place to enable it, there is still a signal to the market that I wonder whether that's particularly helpful for what we're trying to achieve.
I guess briefly, that's not the advice we've had directly. So, and we know Timo and I, we're aware that there's the difference of opinion there. I mean, it's also relevant that we have a resolution for a certain scope of Plan Change 81, and I don't know whether pulling back, but and I'm not familiar with exactly what the growth projections are going forward. I mean, Jackie has presented to you on that.
So just at that point, I'm going to pause you because we are not in a workshop.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're probably moving into the terrain of something that is beyond an information forum meeting. And I see that Tim has his hand up. So sorry, but I will stop you there, Jeremy, and we will go to the mayor.
Yeah, just to follow up the conversation around the conversation with the minister. So my conversation has really been the government has a very big focus on growth and enabling growth, and is somewhat agnostic, I think, as to whether it's brownfields, greenfields, or a combination of both. They just want to see development and growth. My advocacy has really been, given that's what your primary objective is, having held up our Plan Change 81, which is exactly trying to provide for that for as long as you now have, those two things don't really gel that well. So I've just been trying to encourage the government and the minister to effectively enable us to carry on with the process of getting the community's input. And then ultimately there'll be decisions at the end, which may or may not alter the scope once that process has been proceeded with. But we, at this stage, we can't even get to the starting point. So that's been the limit of my advocacy. We are now at a point where we've gone back with, my understanding is, further information. So they've come back. The minister can, my understanding, Barry or Jeremy might be able to confirm. So they can effectively change the scope. So they might say, you can proceed with these particular things, or you can't proceed with this bit, or you can do this but not that, or this is the process you're going to run as part of that decision that the minister has. So just to confirm that. And then coming back to the point that the chair made, I think that we run a risk of kind of delving into the actual plan change conversation in this forum, which is probably not the right place to have it.
Plan Change 84?
Plan Change 84. Again, I think there's less certainty as to where that sits. Barry, I'm not sure. The conversations we've had is that we haven't had the same degree of interaction with the government via MFE or the minister on where we sit with Plan Change 84.
Advocacy?
Same advocacy. Yeah, there's key parts of that we really want to progress. There's some really key drivers for it, whether it relates to issues around Waimea water allocation, water quality management through the Waikarapupu Springs, Golden Bay part of the plan. Again, we've advocated for a decision so that we can all move on and get the community's input and work through the process, but less information about where the government's sitting on that than there is on Plan Change 81, and probably fits less into their areas of importance than the growth-related one.
Thank you for those points and clarification. I just have a couple of things from myself, and then we will adjourn for a coffee break if there's nothing further from Barry, Jeremy or Joanna. So for me, it's a Motueka master plan, and for the new councillors, so there was a whole heap of work that was done around the Motueka master plan, and it's a bit like what Celia was talking about with the fresh water and how much work's been done and where is that information collated and held, because often we're sitting here and we go, we just need more information, there's gaps in our data. So for the record, Motueka master plan has had a heap of work done quietly behind the scenes, because we originally came to the table with what the CBD of Motueka looked like as part of that master plan, and there was quite a strong voice around this table that that wasn't going to be big enough regardless of Plan Change 81. So we looked at whether we could push the master plan scope out, which included Mariri. And then we had some councillors who wanted to include Tasman, because that wasn't included in the Mapua master plan. So there has been a lot of work, there has been a lot of dialogue, and I know that we've had to pause that because we've now got a directive to do a regional spatial plan. But I guess I just want to make sure that everyone is aware we aren't working from a blank canvas, and that all the work that has been gone before us, before I was a councillor and in my two, this is my third, obviously, term, that is collated and not lost. So I just want an assurance, Barry, from your team that that information is stored somewhere really safe, and then we start the work with the spatial plan, that we are including all the work that you've already put in, the fours and, you know, the fours and against, because we didn't come to a mutual place, obviously, of understanding. We were all happy. But can we just have assurance that as per the fresh water work that was done, that that work is not lost?
You did right. We're not working from a blank canvas. And the work that we've done to date around Mapua and Motueka are really important inputs into what will be the next step in terms of this regional spatial plan as well. So it's there. Diana can probably add to that if you want, but we're still doing a lot of work in the background as well.
I guess the thing is that will the new councillors have access to that without wading back through minutes of our previous workshops / meetings?
Yeah, sure. And I mean, we've got a really stable team. We've got that kind of institutional knowledge, so we've got that continuity as well. But the information is very much stored in an easy accessible place and within our system. Yeah.
On the Motueka spatial plan, before we delve into a whole lot of nitty gritty planning detail of, you know, how the place could develop, and maybe that is what the master plan was supposed to achieve, but shouldn't we have a high level discussion with the population about the risks that are affecting the town and what the options are for the town, whether, you know, we mitigate the risks, whether we defend the costs involved in that, the time horizon, how long we can actually follow that strategy, and what the alternatives are and the costs involved in the alternatives. To me, that is the very first question that we need to ask before we actually jump into the spatial plan for Motueka. And in a way, that is, in my view, a piece of work that we need to start almost immediately.
Oh, entirely. I mean, that's the first step is, you know, what does the future of Motueka look like? And that's the first conversation we need to have with the community, outlining things that you've just, you know, set out, is what does the future of Mot look like? Accepting all those things, all those pressures that it's got and all those issues it has. And so that then leads into that discussion around adaptation planning and the costs and benefits and things. So, yeah, entirely dead right.
So do we have a piece of work underway for that?
Yes, so that piece of work is exactly what I'm currently scoping out at the moment, so we'll come back probably to a council committee to discuss it further in the future.
Thank you.
That was Diana Worthy, Natural Resources Team Leader, and Councillor Timo Neubauer in discussion about the Motueka Master Plan. And that was recorded in the 17 March Information Forum meeting, in which the Environmental Policy Quarterly Review Report was tabled and included questions from Councillors Mayling, Greening and Butler. The Port Nelson 125th Anniversary Open Day features the legends of Mohua Aereri. It tells of the ports and wharves and coastal shipping from the 1800s to the mid-1900s. And a feature of the exhibition is a painting by Antarctic and marine artist Sean Garwood. The painting places a viewer on an early Port Nelson wharf circa 1900s, looking at three hookers, one of which is the legendary Felicity. Sean Garwood takes up the story.
The hook and line boats was derived from the name of the Dutch hook and line boats. And, you know, it's a great name for a painting. I just love it. You know, I couldn't help it. Felicity the Blind Bay Hookers. This is fantastic. So how it came about was, as we know, the hooker boats were instrumental in settling the top of the South Island. So they operated throughout, you know, the Tasman Bay, around to Marlborough Sounds, around to the West Coast, and they delivered all the goods and the building materials, which helped build the coastal settlements right throughout the South at the top of the South Island. So they were the workhorses, these little hooker boats. And one of them was called the Felicity. And there's a gentleman here in Nelson, Rob Williams, and his wife Val, great people, and they these great grandfather, get that right, was great grandfather. Anyway, he captained the Felicity, and he showed me some old photos of Felicity, and I thought, well, I've got to include her in the painting, and also just to honour Rob for his fantastic work and his knowledge in helping me with the history for this painting. So that's how it came about. In Felicity, you've got the Felicity, you've got the planet, which is the dark hulled boat in the painting, and then you've got the Maid of Italy. So those three boats would have all been in port together during that time. There's no photographs of that painting, anything like that. But again, I'm talking to these older master mariners, and also reading various books and talking to other historians. And again, this is an example of building up the image in your head, drawing it out many times, and then, hey, look, that's about as factually as I can get it.
As we're looking at the painting, we're going back over this way. Can you just describe that actual physical thing that we're looking at? So the back of we've got Rocks Road, the hill up the back there, and then is it back down towards Tohunanui that way?
Yeah, if you look straight down, you have the Port Hills, and you can see the gum trees above the spars of the Felicity. And then if you look straight down, you can see basically towards Tohuna Beach. And then you can just see Richardson Avenue, Richardson Street, can't think, but comes off Rocks Road. Then it was just a dirt track, but you can see it in the painting going up. And again, that was looking at old photographs during that time that we're talking about of how that foreshore would have looked then. And then you've got the figures in the foreground. Of course, it's a Sunday afternoon. They're out, mum and dad are out with the kids, just having a stroll along the wharf or the waterfront. So again, it's a feel-good story of our maritime history. Yeah.
Antarctic and marine artist Sean Garwood talking about his painting Felicity and the Blind Bay Hookers that features in the legends of Mauhua Aoriri. Details and links about the stories in this episode are on the show notes, and I'm John Bullock for Tasman Report, a production of the Tasman District Council.
The podcast you just listened to was first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz.